Good morning, everybody. If you hear any interruptions, just ignore them. They're probably my two. Like I said, my name's Jeff. I've been here a few times. John has convinced me to be the speaker this morning. So we're going to jump into our message. Today, I work at a camp. I grew up in a very small town, just like I'm going to guess all of you did as well. So I'm going to talk about the wilderness. My titled message is Into the Wilderness, but I don't have a PowerPoint because my wife made the one that you're looking at right now. I'm not very tech savvy. So Into the Wilderness, and today we're going to be talking about how the wilderness can... I like to move, so if I get too far away, just let me know. How the wilderness can be scary, but it's also necessary. Today we're going to look at how God uses the wilderness to help us grow and to protect us. I grew up camping a lot. Looking back, it's probably because we were poor, but that's how we went on vacation, was we went tent camping, and then we'd go do stuff outside of that. As we got older, we got a camper and did all that. And then also in the summers, I stayed with my Aunt Kim, who was a teacher. So when we were not old enough to stay at home, Mom sent us out to her house, and she lived out in the country, and she had this terrible rule where if we were in school time-wise, so from 8 to 3 o'clock, we had to be outside unless it was raining. Hated it. I don't know why, because I was never bored. We were always doing something. They lived on like 120 acres of woods and pasture, so we were always out in the creek playing, doing whatever. But it was a terrible, terrible every morning when she's like, okay, time to go outside. We all moaned and groaned and complained. But the wilderness was always very much a part of my life, and it probably is most of your guys' living, or has been, or is part of your life as well. So I have a few facts about the wilderness, not really, but about being outside and what it can do to improve ourselves, and also some facts about how being inside can be a little too much. Did you know that the average screen time for an American is 7 hours and 5 minutes a day? You're only awake like 16 usually, so that's like almost half your day you're just staring at a screen. For a kid, ages 4 to 18, it's 6.5 hours. So you think kids are on their screen more than us, but that means adults are on it 7 plus if the average is 7. So that's scary. I try not to be on our screen. We try not to let the boys watch too much because they get grumpy, and we can tell when they get grumpy from watching too much TV. Thankfully at camp, we've got a big slide and basketball courts and all this other stuff they can go do. But there's some big benefits of being outside. It improves your vitamin D. It improves your sleep, lessens anxiety, improves focus, and boosts your immunity. Those are all things that are scientifically proven just from being outside for 2 hours a day. Another one is there was a study in New Zealand conducted in 2017 that being outside a minimum of 1.5 to 2 hours a day for kids can either alleviate symptoms of ADHD or prevent ADHD, because it's called being in a green space, and it's just being outside where it's green. It just helps them a lot. You can go look that up. It's in New Zealand. I don't remember the name of the study. So those are big things that just being outside can help us. Tonight, we're not going to be necessarily looking about... I wrote this message for a retreat, and we spoke at night. And now I've updated it, but I must have missed one. So today, we are going to look at how the wilderness can be scary and uncomfortable, but God calls us to do that, usually to prepare us for something. How the wilderness can be scary, I'm not talking about necessarily the physical wilderness now, but maybe something else. And my example is worship. During worship, I have always wanted to be the kind of person that can raise their hand and just praise the Lord and worship and all that. Can't do it. Don't know why. I get frozen with fear. I just, hands are in my pockets, folded, or I make the excuse of, let me hold the baby so then I don't have to. But we had a whole series on our church, about worship, and one of the things that God commands us to do is to point or raise your hands. And since that message 4 months ago, still haven't done it, because it scares me to death. I don't know why. I don't know if I think someone's going to be judging me for putting my hands up, because I've never done it before. I don't know why I think that, because when I see other people do it, I think, wow, I wish I could do that. Wish I was that free. Still can't do it. Working on it. I'll give you an update next year, maybe. So, we all have things that scare us. It could be inviting someone to church, could be starting a new job, moving to a new city, talking to a new neighbor that comes to town. That's my son. But we all have things that scare us. Today we're going to talk about Moses. He had lots of things that scared him, and God called him to do a lot of big things. I'm sure we all know who Moses is, but if we don't, Moses was an Israelite boy that was born right when the Pharaoh decided there's too many of them, let's just kill all the boys. So his mom hid him for like a few months, I believe, and then put him in a basket, sent him down the river, and said, God, he's in your hands. Well, he ended up at the Pharaoh's daughter, found him, wanted to keep him, and raised him to essentially royalty, grew up royalty. He ended up seeing a slave master kill a slave, and no, slave master mistreat a slave, and he killed the slave master, and then he left town because he was worried he was going to get in trouble. So that's where we're going to jump in. I'm going to be in Exodus the whole time. So if you want to go to Exodus 3 with me, that's where we're going to start. I'm going to be jumping around a little bit. I'll give you a chance to get there. So we're going to read Exodus 3, 1 through 4 to start. Exodus 3, one day Moses was tending the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led the flock far into the wilderness and came to Sinai, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the middle of the bush. Moses stared in amazement. Though the bush was engulfed in flames, it didn't burn up. This is amazing, Moses said to himself. Why isn't the bush burning up? I must go see. When the Lord saw Moses coming to take a closer look, God called to him from the middle of the bush, Moses, Moses. He said, here I am, Moses replied. So, Moses just encountered a burning bush far into the wilderness. They made that a point, far into the wilderness, Mount Sinai. And we'll be back to Mount Sinai in a little bit. For us, probably the scariest part would be the fact that a bush just caught on fire spontaneously. Supposedly, I've been informed by students that heard this, that is not uncommon where he was. The uncommon part was it didn't burn up and the fact that it started speaking. So, right after this, God commands Moses to go and free his people. And this is the part where Moses gets a little freaked out. Not the burning bush, not the talking bush. None of that freaks him out. It's when he gets told, you need to go free your people. Understandable. He is asking him to free an entire country's workforce. There was a reason that the Pharaoh commanded them to kill all these boys, was because their population was getting so much so that they could easily overthrow the Egyptians. So he's a little scared, a little intimidated. So we're going to jump to verse 11, and I'm going to read 11 through 15 in chapter 3 still. But Moses protested to God, who am I to appear before Pharaoh? Who am I to lead the people of Israel out of Egypt? God answered, I will be with you, and this is your sign that I am the one who has sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God at this very mountain. But Moses protested, if I go to the people of Israel and tell them, the God of your ancestors has sent me to you, they will ask me, what is his name? Then what should I tell them? God replied to Moses, I am who I am. Say this to the people of Israel, I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, say this to the people of Israel, Yahweh, the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my eternal name, my name to remember for all generations. We see Moses continue to tell God, I don't want to do this, I can't do this, I'm not capable of doing this. But God just doesn't let him use those excuses. He pushes him to do it. Now, we don't have a burning bush telling us what to do or how to do it, but I'm sure we've all heard God speak to us sometime in our past. I've heard God speak to me, and sometimes it's scary. Like, hey, Jeff, I know you just graduated college and you're working, but I want you to move across the state and run a church camp. Pretty scary, but I buckled down, I did it, took some convincing, but It's great, and I love it, and I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. So our first point, and I should have mentioned this before, I have 3 points. First point is you have to accept God's call even when it scares you. God's not known for giving people many options. He lets you know what he wants you to do, and he's going to find a way for you to do it. So now we're going to jump a little further into Exodus, over to 13, if you want to go ahead and get there. Here we see that Moses went in, he did all the things God told him to do, the plagues came, and Pharaoh said, get out. So Moses said, okay, let's go. But God is prepared when they're leaving. So I'm going to read at 17. I'm going to read 17, 18, and then I'm going to jump to 21 and 22. When Pharaoh finally let the people go, God did not lead them along the main road that runs through Philistine territory, even though that was the shortest route to the Promised Land. God said, if the people are faced with a battle, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. So God led them in a roundabout way through the wilderness toward the Red Sea. Thus, the Israelites left Egypt like an army ready for battle. And then 21, the Lord went ahead of them. He guided them during the day with a pillar of cloud, and he provided light at night with a pillar of fire. This allowed them to travel by day or by night, and the Lord did not remove the pillar of cloud or pillar of fire from its place in front of the people. So, again, God uses the wilderness to protect these people. He sent them far out of the way because he knew that if they were encountered by anyone or any resistance, these people would just hightail it right back to Pharaoh. He also uses a huge pillar of fire and cloud to guide these people. I don't know why. I mean, I'd be scared of that, but if you knew it's God's presence, then you shouldn't be scared of anything that's about to come. But he knew they would be, so he let them out of the way. Now we're going to jump to 14. I know it feels like we're jumping around a lot, but it'll all come together, I promise. So chapter 14, this is right when Pharaoh decides he wants his people back, and he sends the army after them. So 14, 9 through 14. So the Egyptians chased after them with all the forces in Pharaoh's army, all his horses and chariots, his charioteers and his troops. The Egyptians caught up with the people of Israel as they were camped beside the shore near a big name across from Baal-Zephon. As Pharaoh approached, the people of Israel looked up and panicked when they saw the Egyptians overtaking them. They cried out to the Lord, and they said to Moses, "Why did you bring us out here to die in the wilderness? Weren't there enough graves for us in Egypt? What have you done to us? Why did you make us leave? Didn't we tell you this would happen while we were still in Egypt? We said, 'Leave us alone. Let us be slaves to the Egyptians. It's better to be a slave in Egypt than a corpse in the wilderness.'" But Moses told the people, "Don't be afraid. Just stand still and watch the Lord rescue you today. The Egyptians you see today will never be seen again. The Lord himself will fight for you. Just stay calm." So, if you hadn't guessed, the Egyptians had pretty much whipped these guys into shape, and they knew exactly what they wanted. They wanted to go back and be slaves. They got fed, they were housed, they had steady work, they had really no income, but they didn't need it. They were complicit with their lives. And you see this complaint through the rest of the book of Exodus. They complain for the next 40 years that they would rather just be slaves than put up with this. God is not asking us to seek comfortable lives. He is asking us to further the kingdom for him, and sometimes we have to get out of our comfort zone. I know that sounds scary. A lot of people like being in their comfort zone. I am one of those people. But you have to trust in him. Our second point is trust God when he is leading you outside of your comfort zone. I've never been one to want to be out of my comfort zone. Ralph, my oldest, is also one that never wants to be outside his comfort zone. Can you wave to everyone, Ralph? Yeah. See? Hates it. Okay? But he loves it after he gets used to the place. By the time we get downstairs to eat, he'll be running around. He'll be high-fiving people. I coach basketball in Ramsey, and my first practice I took Ralph to, he sat on the bench and didn't say a word or move a muscle. And the last practice I took him to here just recently, I have to coax him off the floor to stop bothering the boys when they're trying to play basketball. So he got out of his comfort zone, and now it's one of his favorite places to go. He asked me every day after daycare, Bad? Basketball? Basketball? Practice? Exercise? Okay, so we need to trust God when he's leading us outside of our comfort zone. So we've got one more scripture to look at, and this is my biggest chunk of talking. Sorry if you're tired of hearing my voice already. So the last bit of scripture we're looking at tonight is when Moses takes the Israelites to Mount Sinai. It's a big jump we're about to make, but unless you want to read 20 chapters about how to build the tabernacle or live and all these rules that he gave, we're going to skip it so I don't bore you to death. So we are going to read it. This is when they get to Mount Sinai. He has gone up into the hills, and the Spirit of the Lord has rested on the mountain. It is a visible thing. They can see the Spirit of the Lord visible on the mountain. That's important for what I'm about to read to you. So we're reading 32:1-14. Normally I'd ask someone else to read. Does anyone want to read? No? Okay, I'll read. When the people saw how long it was taking Moses to come back down the mountain, they gathered around Aaron. Come on, they said, make us some gods who can lead us. We don't know what happened to this fellow Moses who brought us here from the land of Egypt. So Aaron said, take the gold rings from the ears of your wives and sons and daughters and bring them to me. All the people took the gold rings from their ears and brought them to Aaron. Then Aaron took the gold, melted it down, and molded it into the shape of a calf. When the people saw it, they exclaimed, O Israel, these are the gods who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Aaron saw how excited the people were, so he built an altar in front of the calf. Then he announced, tomorrow will be a festival to the Lord. The people got up early the next morning to sacrifice burnt offerings and peace offerings. After this, they celebrated with feasting and drinking, and they indulged in pagan revelry. The Lord told Moses, quick, go down to the mountain. Your people whom you brought from the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. How quickly they have turned away from the way I commanded them to live. They have melted down gold and made a calf. And they have bowed down and sacrificed to it. They are saying, these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Then the Lord said, I have seen how stubborn and rebellious these people are. Now leave me alone so my fierce anger can blaze against them, and I will destroy them. Then I will make you, Moses, into a great nation. But Moses tried to pacify the Lord. He said, O Lord, he said, why are you so angry with your own people, whom you brought from the land of Egypt with such great power and such a strong hand? Why let the Egyptians say, their God rescued them from the evil intention of slaughtering them in the mountains and wiping them from the face of the earth? Turn away from your fierce anger. Change your mind about this terrible disaster you have threatened against your people. Remember your servants Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You bound yourself with an oath to them, saying, I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars of heaven, and I will give them all this land that I have promised to your descendants, and they will possess it forever. So the Lord changed his mind about the terrible disaster he had threatened to bring upon them. So Moses had been up there for like 40 days at this point. And within those 40 days, they decided Moses isn't coming back. Spirit of the Lord is still on the mountain. They still see it, but they've decided Moses abandoned them and they need new gods. These are the same people that witnessed all the plagues, had a pillar of cloud and fire guiding them at night, had the Red Sea split so they could walk through it, and manna and water given to them every day. And they still doubted that quickly that their God was for them. Happens a lot when we have some idle time. 40 days seems like a long time, probably just to sit around the bottom of the mountain. But anytime we get idle, usually not great things happen. Right now, that experience is coming through the form of my youngest son, Ted.
Yep, talking about you, buddy.
So, this was a few months ago. Ralph had gotten shots at the doctor, and was not wanting to take a bath, because he thought if his Band-Aids got wet, the shots would hurt again. So he was screaming in the bathtub. The other two kids had already taken baths. I was holding Clarabelle while Shelby was trying to coax Ralph into sitting down. And Ted was quietly sitting at the table. He's never quiet. He asked for some help. And I said, give me a second. And I went to go check on Mom and Ralph. And I come back maybe a few minutes later. And he has salted my entire table. He had got the salt shaker and decided to make it snow over everything. And he was pretty proud of himself. He's actually very proud. He's like, Dad, look. and gestured to all the salt he had made on the table. So, he had idle time, no one was watching him, and he made a bad decision. To him, he's still young, so he doesn't really realize it was a bad decision, but for me, it stunk because I had to clean up a whole bunch of salt while all this other craziness was happening with shots and Band-Aids. So, we need to not let a lack of an answer be a bad thing. Sometimes we go into the wilderness and we think we're listening, and we don't hear anything. That's not always not an answer, right? Ted didn't get an answer. I'm sure he just wanted a snack, and I ignored it, and I got punished, so maybe I should have been the one listening. But, so our third point is this. When we are in the wilderness, don't let a lack of an answer be an answer. I know the wilderness can be scary, and you're not really sure what to do. And you might even think that God isn't talking to you. But sometimes you need to physically go to the wilderness to get that answer. That wilderness doesn't necessarily have to be outside in the woods or far away from people, but maybe just away from the people in your house or outside your house or into a quiet room to really try to listen. I know sometimes I feel like I'm not listening, or I feel like I'm listening and I'm not getting an answer right away. Sometimes God's just telling me, hey, you need to wait to get that answer. So remember to don't let that lack of an answer be your answer. Just be patient. Let God work. He is working in His time, and we need to be receptive to that. Like I said, my name is Jeff. I've been here a few times. I think this is the first time with Clarabelle, so family of five. So we got Ralph, Ted, Clarabelle. They're very energetic and full of life, so that's good. But today I'm going to talk about camp, what we did last year, and what we're hoping to do this next season. And then we'll jump in. So I think I'm going to start with a video.
Get too excited. You give me hope.
Last summer in updates. It's dark on here, so I'm going to be peeking back there to tell you. So we've been remodeling cabins. Essentially, since me and Shelby took over, we've been attempting to do this, and we have just broke the halfway mark, which is a big deal. So we're 6 of 11 are finished, which is awesome. I know the kids like them. I know the counselors like them. The old ones are looking worse and worse the more new ones we get. So we're getting those done. I think the momentum's building. We're getting more done at a time. We updated the chapel. If you can see in this picture, the background of it is the chapel updated. Instead of a projector that turns off halfway through every other song, we've got TVs on the walls. We added a pallet wall in the back, and it looks really nice, and we're going to some more updates coming this year, hopefully. We purchased a new mower. If you guys had used the mowers or seen the mowers, they were older than me and Shelby probably combined, and they broke every time we used them. So we thankfully had the funds to go out and buy a new mower, and it cut our mowing time in like half. So I'm not spending 4 hours every day during the summer mowing. I'm spending one afternoon mowing, which is great. It helps me be at other things that need done as well. So last summer we had 220 kids. That was about 10 more than we had the summer before, which is good. And we're almost back to pre-COVID numbers. So we're hoping to at least hit that, if not go a little higher than that. And we also had 2 baptisms last year at the camp in the lake, which is always fun to do. This summer, I think it's going to be 2 slides. That's sensitive. Sorry. My bad. I'll put my papers down. So our summer theme is made new. It's 2 Corinthians 5:17. This means that anyone who belongs to Christ has become a new person. The old life is gone and a new life has begun. We're hoping to show kids what it means to be made new in Christ and how that affects their lives, not only at camp and church, but at home and at school, with their friends, all of that. So we're really looking forward to it. We've got a lot of good speakers planned, and we hope all the kids enjoy it as well. We've got some important dates on the next slide. There it is. The big one is we have our spring work day coming up at the end of March. If you have never been to camp or haven't been in a long time, that would be a great time to come down, even if you're not quite capable of helping a whole bunch, but you want to see the updates we've been making at camp. All the buildings will be unlocked. We'll be getting ready for the season. We'll provide lunch. So that usually starts about 9 in the morning and goes to whenever people leave. Usually shortly after lunch is when people start to head out, but we live there. So as late as you want to work, I'll be there. Then we also have our spring retreat coming up. Make sure that's there. Yep, spring retreat. So that's 6th through 12th grade. It's just a time to get away from home, get away from school, and just get back together with your camp friends and just get refreshed before the summer camp starts. And then we have our second women's retreat. The first one was a big hit. All the ladies that came seemed to have a really good time. We're hoping this one's going to be bigger. Shelby has been planning and is really excited about having everyone. The theme is Be Still. It's reversed back there. It's on this side. I feel like a weatherman. It's on that side. Be Still. If you're interested in going to either of those things, sign up is online at our website at campmaranatha.org, or you can get to it via our Facebook page, all that stuff. But it's registration's open. If any ladies want to come, it's a lot of fun. Friday, leave Sunday, meals, fun times to be had by all. I don't know. You probably won't see me or the kids, but you might see Clarabelle. She's a lady. And then we have summer camps. Summer camp registration's open as well. All of June, we've got two junior high options to go to. If you want to go to both, I'm not going to tell you no, but your parents might. So you're welcome to come to those. Registration is open for all of that. All the registration is on our website now. And then I've got another slide of how you can help. How can you help? People always ask afterwards how they can get involved, so we've made a list of things that we always need help with. Send campers. You guys already do a great job of that, sending all your little ones down to camp. They seem to have a good time because they keep coming back, so I hope they are having a good time, or you guys are just sending them anyways. Also attend events like our spring retreat, our spring work day, our women's retreat. We're planning on having an end of the summer bash this summer. That's a big help, just getting people there to see camp, see the work we're putting in, and just to get the word out as much as we can that we're around, we're making improvements, and that we're a great place to come to. I can't read that without my glasses. Summer counselors. I've got one summer counselor from here, and anyone over the age of 18 or graduated high school that has a free summer that wants to help kids come to Christ and learn more, send them my way. We'd love having them, and we are always looking for more good Christ-centered kids. So if they're interested, let me know. If you know anyone that you want me to reach out to, come talk to me afterwards. Another thing is summer kitchen volunteers. That is a huge help to us, because if we don't get summer kitchen help, we either have to pay someone that school cooks want a lot of money. So if we get help, it helps us not have to be in the kitchen to do things. Like a few years, Shelby has been a cook, and I've helped out. But when we have help, we can be at events with the kids. We can be getting things ready for the next event. And we can just be with the kids, investing in them, rather than stuck in the kitchen. So if you're interested in that, we have overnight camps. We have three-day camps. We have week-long camps. If you just want to come for a day, we'd take you. We've got the menu prepared. We've got the food all bought. All you have to do is show up and cook, and Shelby has all the measurements of how much food to prepare ready. So it's really simple. We just need extra hands in the kitchen to help out. So if you're interested in that, or bringing a group of people, usually 3 to 4 are the best, because then you're not stuck in the kitchen. You can actually get it all done and go do something else. Come talk to us afterwards. We'd love to put you down or talk to you more about what that means. Rent our facilities. If you guys, as a family reunion, an individual, a church, want to come down and use camp, we are open for rentals all year outside of winter and June and July. Besides that, we're open. We have some people come. We're trying to get more. Our facilities are getting much nicer than they were, and We just want people to come out and enjoy the space that we've created and been able to provide for people. So if you're interested in that, you can do it on our website. You can come talk to us. Item of the month donations. I believe we've sent those out. If not, it's things like paper plates, cleaning supplies, just little things for an individual. If they bought one thing, doesn't put them back much. But if a whole church or many churches buy all those things, it provides enough for us so we don't have to go get those things. That just helps curb our costs throughout the year and helps us continue to provide good programming for all these kids that come. And then monetary donations. So we have the ability to do automatic monthly donations, or if you just want to give a monthly donation, that's fine too. Our goal when we started that idea was about $2,000 a month is what we'd like to bring in through just donations from individuals or families on top of what churches and other groups send, so that we can continue the improving the programs and facilities at camp quicker. When I first took over, after camp was over, we shut the lights off and prayed we made it to the next season. Now we are getting to the point that we can keep the lights on a little longer and start fixing things like buying new mowers and updating the chapel. But there's, if you haven't been to camp in a while, there's still a lot of things that need fixed and upgraded and remodeled. So that helps us do that much faster than we could do on our own. If you are interested in doing that, like I said, our goal was $2,000. We're at about $500 to $600 a month is what we're getting through automatic monthly donations online. So we're getting there. It's just a slow building process. So if you're interested in that, it's on our website. There's a donate tab. You can just click it, and that'll help you set everything up. Or you can talk to us, and I can help you get it set up. Or we also take checks. But however you want to do it. But then the last thing is prayer. We're a church camp. Just like your church needs prayer, and your youth needs prayer, and your individual congregation needs it, our camp needs it. Our staff needs it. They come from all over the place. Our kids really need it. We have kids that come from churches. We have kids that come from whole homes, broken homes, mixed homes, like all backgrounds. They need prayer. Our board that help make the decisions to camp improve and continue on in the future needs prayer, just so that we can continue to do what God wants us to do. So just continue to keep us in our prayers. Keep us in your prayers.